to James chapter 5. It's a passage that Cody just read for us. Appreciate you doing that, Cody. So I enjoy, just as much as the next guy, a good topical sermon series, right? Pick some idea, talk about faith or love, and work through it and find some scriptures that support maybe our ideas about love. That is a good approach. That's a good way to study scripture. It's a good way to approach sermon series and things like that. But oftentimes what happens when we go with that approach is that we may not cover text like the one that Cody just read for us. We might do what some have called a Bible-ectomy, and we sort of forget or skip over a certain part of Scripture because it might make us feel a little bit uncomfortable. But this morning, we are going to get right into this text that Cody just read for us. But first, and I'm looking on the screen here, I almost forgot about a couple of announcements. So just hold what I just said. And let's get back to this here. Okay, the last Sunday of this month, we are going to have what we're calling a fifth Sunday congregational meal. It is going to take place down at the Fellowship Hall. It's going to be much like the fellowship meals we've been enjoying for some time. The difference with this one is that it's going to be on the fifth Sunday, not the fourth Sunday. And after the end of our time eating, we are going to have a time of worship. One note about this worship. I know when we finish up eating, a lot of people like to get after cleaning everything up. Here's what we ask. First of all, we appreciate that you want to get everything cleaned up. Here's what we're going to ask, though. If you are involved in cleaning up, and we hope everyone will take part in that, please wait until after our time of worship to do that cleaning up. That's what we ask of you. Okay. Also, let's go back to that other screen. There we go. Image there. The fifth Sunday fellowships that we're going to have are going to take place every fifth Sunday, and they are taking the place of the fellowship meals that we usually have on a monthly basis. So essentially, our fellowship meals are going to be on a quarterly basis from this point forward instead of on a monthly basis. Are we clear? We got that. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Next Sunday, at the conclusion of our worship service, we are going to have a prayer for students, teachers, administrators, faculty. What we're going to ask is that all of those that are involved in school, going back to school, college students included, we're going to come forward, and then we're going to have a prayer of blessing over you as you begin a new school year. So those are the two notes I wanted to get across. Now, switching gears, let's go back to James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. Welcome to church on a Sunday morning. This is the word that James has for us. My friend used to live out in the country, and this is in Ohio, farm fields as far as you can see. Across from his house, he had a huge field, and oftentimes they would grow tomatoes in that field. Each summer, around July and August, that field would be not only full of ripe tomatoes, but it would be full of people. I'm ashamed of what the locals referred to those people as. But everybody knew, at this time of year, the population in this small town would just about double as the workers, many of them coming from places like Georgia and Florida and Texas, would come up to do the work in the fields. When I read this passage in James 5, I get that image of my mind looking over the field and seeing people working in those fields, doing things like picking the tomatoes that were now ripe. I get that image in my mind. And James wrote, "Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you." So when James talks about these rich people, is he referring to those who are in the church or those who are outside the church? I think the answer is yes. I think he's talking about both groups. Like Isaiah and Amos, James is kind of like a social prophet who is speaking into the culture and seeing the ills of a society that is getting a wider and wider gap between the wealth of the wealthiest of the society and those who are poor. The church was part of this culture. They understood it. They breathed in the culture. And so, is James talking about those rich people who are outside or those who are in? I think he's talking about both. If James is primarily talking about those who are outside the church, as James is proclaiming this word of truth to those people, the church would have overheard the message. I think the rich people are both those in the wider culture and within the church. And he says, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on them. In other words, judgment would be executed on them. And three times, if we go back to the passage, please. There we go. If we go back to the passage, three times, James is going to talk about this impending judgment that is coming on these rich people. He says, first of all, misery is coming on them, verse 1. In verse 2, you notice he says, the corrosion of their wealth will eat their flesh like fire, because they have hoarded wealth in the last days. And then in verse 5, he says, the rich people have fattened themselves in the day of slaughter. What is coming to them, let's be clear, what is coming to them is not good. And the misery that's coming their way is directly related to their wealth. Verses 2 and 3 again, your wealth has rotted, James writes, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. So James is very clear concerning the charges against these rich people. Right? Verse 4, look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. Apparently, these rich people haven't paid their workers. They haven't paid attention to these workers. They haven't cared for these workers. And then it will continue on here. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. So while their workers in their fields are having a very tough time, and we can just use our imagination to think of what that would have been like, these rich people are living a luxurious lifestyle. They haven't paid their workers, and yet they are simply just living it up. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter, James continues in verse 6. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. The innocent one here, I think, is primarily referring to these poor workers, right? They didn't do anything wrong, yet these rich people have not cared for them. In fact, James uses the strongest terms you could think of in not caring for them, not hearing them, not providing for them. It's as if they've condemned them. It's as if they've murdered them. And I think, going on to the next slide now, I think the sin of the rich people is primarily arrogance. It's not wealth. but it's their attitude towards wealth. The sin is arrogance. So a scholar named Luke Timothy Johnson noted that this text, James 5, 1 through 6, is a concluding word from James on the sin of arrogance. It starts back in the first couple verses of chapter 4. We go back and read that. James wrote, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but do not have, so you kill, you covet, but you cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God." So arrogance is sort of at the heart of relational strife. As the community of faith would quarrel and fight, it had to do with one's attitude, one's arrogance. The second one, skipping down to verses 13 through 16 of chapter 4, James wrote, "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that." So this arrogance, again, being displayed by the people, in this case, these business people, it causes one to think that he or she is in control of their life. They get to dictate what their life is going to look like. They've got their plans, and without a doubt, they can live out those plans. Arrogance moves us to think that we are in control of our lives. And then, of course, now in our passage that we're looking at this morning, primarily let's look at verse 4. "Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Almighty." Arrogance, and Luke Timothy Johnson points this out, and I agree with him, arrogance is at the heart of the mistreatment of others, and specifically in this case, in the landowners mistreating their workers. So arrogance sort of distorts how people view other people. Or we can make it very personal. Arrogance distorts how we view others. The rich people in this text viewed others, specifically their workers, in an arrogant manner. And as James points out very clearly, because of this sin, there would be consequences coming their way. The rich people here, they should have been asking, or should be asked, we could ask them this question. So who owns the field that produces the crop of your field? You or God? Who made the gold and silver that you treasure so dearly? You or God? In whose image were your workers made? You or God? Who makes the plants grow that is making you so wealthy? Is it you or God? James concludes this paragraph, chapter 5, verse 6. He says, "You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you." So their arrogance was so huge that they believed that they had the power to put on the judge's robe, to position themselves in the judge's seat, to procure this gavel, and to pronounce a judgment of death. If that's not arrogance, I don't know what is. We know that only one has the power to be the judge. That's not a rich person. Doesn't matter how large of a field they really have. There's only one who has the power to be the judge, and that's God. And I think one of the reasons that arrogance is so destructive is because it keeps us from seeing people as God sees people. And so whenever we're talking about this, I think we need to start at the beginning. A place like Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. Let's look specifically at verse 27. All the way back to the beginning, Genesis 1, 27. "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. So any talking or thinking about how we relate to other people must start here. Every person is created in the image of God. Every person is created in the image of God. The workers in the field, those ones that were crying out to their landowners, were made in the image of God. Your boss is made in the image of God. Your co-workers are made in the image of God. Those people who we've seen on the news recently, who picked up a gun and opened fire on others, they were made in the image of God. Our spouse was made in the image of God. Your children's teachers, they were made in the image of God. The administrators were made in the image of God. Everyone is made in the image of God. You were created in the image of God. And James wrote in verse 4, "The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty." And the rich people didn't have the time of day to hear the cries of the people that were across the street from them. They were crying, "Feed us, pay us, take care of us." If they did hear them, they felt no obligation to do anything about their plight. But God hears them. So like, this passage, I realize, we're looking at James 5, we're thinking about rich people, and one thing we're thinking is like, okay, we're not the rich people, you know? I have no fields. I have a garden, but it hasn't produced any crops in years. I have a small house. I need a bigger house. I don't drive a nice car. You get the idea. We don't think we're the rich people, right? If you live in the United States of America, you are rich. Let's just settle that right now. You may not feel like it. Your bank account may not testify to that, but the opportunities that you have just because of your zip code make you rich compared to the rest of the world. So let's just settle that right now. We are rich. But let's also be clear that just because we live in the United States, that doesn't mean there aren't poor people around us. You kind of see what we're doing there? We're all rich, but that doesn't mean that there are people around us who aren't crying out. And so do we hear the widows who are crying for help? What about the orphans? Do we hear them? James has something to say about that, doesn't he, in chapter 1? What about the women who think that their only option is abortion? Do we hear them? What about those who are drowning in medical debt? Do we hear their cries? How about those hungry children in Africa? You know, I do it too. When you see those commercials, you flip, right? You flip. But there's a reality there. It's true. What about the children who are in the inner city who all they know are drugs and gangs? What about those people that we have termed illegal? Do we hear their cries? What about the person who is confused about their sexual orientation? Do we hear their cries? You see, what arrogance does, and I think this is what was happening with these rich people that James is talking about. What arrogance does is it takes its hands and puts it over the ears. Say, I have no time for that. I'm too busy enjoying the luxurious lifestyle. I have way too much silver and gold that I have earned. Look at my big house. Look at the fields. Look at how much stuff that I have. Arrogance puts hands over the ears. What would Jesus do? How would He handle this? I don't think Jesus would put His hands over His ears. Instead, I think He would say, "Talk to me. I'm listening. How can I help you find healing and hope?" So I've been to Haiti a few times. I've told you that, and I don't mean that like a proud way. Like, hey, I've been on mission trips. I'm super spiritual. But one of the things that I thought about on one of the trips I was on, I was just kind of driving around the streets, and you know how it's extreme poverty. But one of the things that I thought about was I could have so easily been born in Haiti. I didn't do anything to cause myself to be born where I did. And you didn't either. Randy Harris has this saying that I love. He says, for a lot of his students, they were born on third base and think they hit a triple. Right? For so many of us, we didn't have anything to do with where we were born. We didn't have anything to do with the parents that we had, maybe that raised us to know Jesus or raised us to have some sort of good worth ethic and to desire college or whatever the case may be. And so I think what happens is that arrogance sort of grows out of this belief that we are in control. And it kind of puts us in a position where we think that we are some sort of God, and our eyes become so fixed on who we are and what we have accomplished that our eyes no longer see people as God sees people, because we are so just loving our lives, loving who we are, what we have done for ourselves. Are we willing to see people as God sees people? I love this prayer. And perhaps for like a challenge for this week, allow this prayer to sort of be absorbed into your heart. It's this: God, help me to see as you see and to hear as you hear. God, give me a heart like your hearts. How do you shed this kind of arrogance from your life? An arrogance that I know all too well. I think primarily it comes from continual submission to God. In this submitting to God, we recognize our need for Him. We recognize that all we possess, all that we are, is from Him and from Him alone. It's a recognition that without God, I am nothing and you are nothing. I'm so thankful for ministries like the food pantry, and specifically what Terry Sue and Ezra do through that ministry, what God does through them in that ministry. And the hope is that God will continue to work in us in powerful ways as we humbly strive to serve Him. God, help me to see as you see and to hear as you hear. God, give me a heart like your heart. If there's anybody here this morning that desires the prayers of the church family, here as we sing an invitation song, you can come up here to the front and let us know what's going on in your life, and we'd be glad to pray with you. If there's anybody here today that is ready to be washed in the blood of Jesus in baptism, we would be just absolutely thrilled to witness you make that decision today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward as we stand and continue to worship our Creator.